$1,000 to fund Group 4 and 5, North Beach District.
Well, let's call a meeting to order first.
I thought you did, I'm sorry.
I'll call a meeting to order. Let the record reflect that Representatives Phillips, Snyder, Olsey, and Rudd are present. We're going to take up today House Bill Number 215, making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for the Daycare Assistance Program. Okay, Mr. Snyder.
Madam Chair, I move that we amend House Bill 215 to include $80,000 for Groups 4 and 5, Anchorage District.
It's just Group 4 and 5.
Start to back out on last page.
Mr. Snyder, I think the best form of the amendment is just simply, the amendment would be to simply add the sum of $80,000 for the Anchorage instead of specifying the groups, because that's not in the bill. No groups are specified in the bill, nor are any communities. So I think maybe the amendment ought to be just add $80,000.
I agree. Would you amend by $80,000 then?
Would the committee like to vote on the amendment now, or would you rather wait until you hear the testimony?
Yeah, let's hear what it's all about here. $80,000. Why isn't it in here already?
Yeah. I think maybe we could hear that best by hearing the testimony. Is that all right with you now? And your amendment will stand as proposed?
Fine with me. Is there anybody, I'd like to know though, if there's anybody here in opposition to the bill? Get
is
out
anyone
of here,
here in opposition to the bill? Ms. Donnelly, would you come forward? You can sit right here. We take record our session, so I'll ask you to state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
I'm Therese Donnelly, Program Manager for the Anchorage Municipality Daycare Assistance Program. The original intent of the Community and Regional Affairs Daycare Assistance Program was to assist families who were working, training, or going to school receive daycare if it was the object that, due to not being able to afford the current cost of daycare, it would free them to work, train, or go to school. And those families that were eligible for the program were not on welfare or other assistance. With the passage of Senate Bill 753, we, Community and Regional Affairs, more or less inherited the AFDC and WIN recipients. And this, of course, is probably one of the main reasons why, at this present time, we are having problems in funding and accommodating the people that are not eligible for AFDC. In July, I could see with the amount of AFDC recipients that were in the Anchorage area that we would need additional funding. And I contacted Community and Regional Affairs, and our grant was up at that time. The amount of families that are now on AFDC and receiving 100% subsidy is taking more than half of our current monthly money. This month, started to deny families that were coming onto the program in Group 4 and 5 and had to send out notices of cutting those families which were in Group 4 and 5. I have some statistics together, and I'll hand it down to you as to just what our monthly costs are at the present time. I feel that additional funding needs to be given to the families that are, in fact, helping themselves and are only looking for a small amount of assistance. One of the largest problems in cutting off the families in the Anchorage area were the majority of them are single father household, and this is going to be a great burden on them.
Would you like, is this all one document?
Yes, and it's all attached. The top are the ones that we deny, and I added to the bottom the actual cost per month that we are paying in those two groups. And also on the second page are the AFDC statistics as of February of 77. And I have broken that down to the exact number that we have and the cost that it is costing us for monthly per child. The next...
Do you have more?
Yes, I do.
Share with the rest of the... Why don't we hand them out to the rest of the committee so as you go through it, they can look. You're on the third page now.
And on the third page is some data that we have gathered together on to how many single fathers are in the program, the number of children. And this 1976 and 77, we did not total them, but those are the... You have to add those two columns in order to get exactly how many are. During 19...
Yes, Mr. Olson.
Do any of these include, see now we have so many that are living without marriages. Is any of those in this deal where we have a couple living together that...
We can't tell you that. The only thing that I know in the Anchorage area, if there is a single mother and she is living with the child's father, that we do count both incomes, regardless of whether or not they are married.
Well, I think you realize that whether taking a man and woman be living together and have the child, and still she would be a unwedded mother in a salary vehicle, she would still be getting this help. How close is this investigator?
All right. Just about as close as AFDC recipients are.
Well, maybe that isn't very close.
Well, I think she answered your question by saying that both incomes are counted towards eligibility for the assistance program.
Yeah. Right. Because there is a little bit of this going on.
As long as they come in and they tell us, then both incomes are counted.
As long as you catch them together.
Right.
Thank you.
And if you'll notice that during 1977, we had original denials on application of 74, and it jumped to 178 and 77. And then further on down, we gave them this stuff. And on the last page is our current statistics for the month of January on expenditures. And this is not completed. We have 105 providers in the Anchorage area. The institution of and the changeover of AFDC recipients to CRA, I have no objection to. In fact, I probably am more in favor of it. And the reason is because many of the facilities in Anchorage did not want to receive or take state aid children. Now we have more facilities participating in the program and more than willing to take CRA children. Another thing that I really think is a boon with us taking the AFDC children are the fact that there is no discrimination shown now. No facility knows whether or not a mother or father is on welfare unless they want to make it known themselves. The only thing that I really believe is that with the transfer of those children to the CRA program, the funding should have been transferred with it, rather than to penalize and subvert the original intent of the program.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nyland. I waited just a second to see if anyone would like to ask a question. Are there any questions of Ms. Nyland? No, thank you very much. Mr. Pitts, would you join us up here?
Madam Chairperson, my name is Harvey Pitts. I'm Child Care Programs Coordinator for the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. I really have no testimony to present unless you have some specific questions you'd like to ask me regarding the appropriation, and then I might make a few comments regarding its impact later.
Yeah, what's the stand of the Community and Regional Affairs on this appropriation, the need for it?
Representative Rossi, basically we were opposed to the supplemental appropriation not so much because of the impact on the current year, but because of the impact in the future years. And again, because we feel that the supplemental appropriation would subvert the original intent of the legislation itself.
What was that original intent?
Well, the original intent was to provide a subsidy for low-income or single-parent families to prevent the cost of child care from being a determining factor of whether or not the family can be self-supporting. But the legislation itself spelled out originally that preference be shown to low-income and single-parent families. Well, the supplemental schedules that we devised and setting forth groups 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 essentially does this so that when a program has expended a great deal of its funds, it can simply lop off group 5, live within the legislation itself, and still be showing preference to the lower income families.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Pitts why it is that the all the monies were expended by January.
Well, it depends on which community you're talking about. Actually, Kodiak had expended a great deal of its funds earlier than January. Fairbanks had expended its money a great deal earlier than January. In no case is there any program operating at the current time where we could not fund the Group 1 level, and the Group 1 level is the very lowest income level.
Chairman,
sure,
continue. Mm-hmm. Information that I received through Fairbanks was that they were told to heavily advertise this program July 1, and when they questioned why they were to heavily advertise given the amount of money they had to work with, the answer came back, don't worry about it, we'll get a supplemental appropriation come January. Well, it's January and now you say you're not interested in a supplemental appropriation, and I'm curious as to why these people would be encouraged to be involved in a program that would be taken away from them about the time that they're beginning to get going on it.
Well, it's, am I taking it as a question or a comment? It's difficult to respond to it.
And I would like an explanation.
Yes, my only response is that I know of no one who advised Fairbanks to heavily advertise the program itself. Definitely, I nor anyone else that I know of ever suggested that we would request a supplemental.
I still don't think you've answered my question, though, of how it is that the department is not requesting a supplemental based on the fact that these people have gotten started. Even if there was nothing said about it, it seems to me this is a backward direction to go from within the department.
Well, as I stated in the very beginning, we feel that the intent of the legislature itself in passing AS 44.47 originally was to not fund everybody who could possibly qualify for the program. We gave the local communities broad authority to subsidize the people that they thought needed it most. We assured that the low-income people would be shown preference by establishing groups. We feel that we have been working towards satisfying the intent of the legislation as well as the letter of the law.
Okay, if I may ask one more question then. If this be the case, why did you not discourage them from funding Group 5 in the beginning by pointing out that their projected expenditure would run them out in January?
Well, again, my only response is that I had no way of knowing how far their finances would carry them simply because on July 1, I had no way of knowing how many people they were subsidizing or what their monthly cost was.
It seemed that by September 1, that should have been known.
By September 1, Fairbanks was in process of deciding that their funding would not carry them the entire year. This is one reason why we increased the North Star Girls funding once already, and we're in process of giving them an additional $18,000 now. Simply because we did find out at a fairly early time that the funds would not last. But again, I go back to the original intent of the program, which is not to fund everyone who's potentially eligible.
Mr. Kelly.
Well, when they realized that their funding was running out in September, did they cut back in Group 5?
Yes, sir, they did. As a matter of fact, in October, they cut back Group 4 and 5, and I believe it was November, they cut back Group 3. December, they cut back Group 2, so that now they're currently funding Group 1 only.
Mr. Buffin.
It bothers me, but I'm wondering what kind of management system you have, that you cannot have a handle on what you're doing in these communities so that you can monitor it and you know, proportion it out so it's done properly over the time frame that's allocated so you don't run into this kind of problem.
Okay, basically our setup is on grant basis, recommended to the different municipalities. Our philosophy is to make the grant available to the community and allow them as much latitude as possible under the statute to run their own affairs.
I'm not sure how your division does it, Mr. Pitts, but when I was with the department, we had to report monthly to the state. My director knew exactly where my grants were on a month-to-month basis, and he could tell if my projections were close, and I had to project for the remainder of the year exactly where my dollars were and plan accordingly. I came in with $3.65 left at the end of June.
I have a loss also as to you start a program at the 1st of July and then come around the January 1st and say cut it off. It seems that this thing should have been prorated out so that they know what it is. And if these are groups are eligible 1st of July, I don't know why they shouldn't be eligible 1st of January. This is the part that serves me, that why they should be eligible one time of the year, and then, because what you're saying, we give them X number of dollars and throw your best pitch and that's it.
Well, Representative Rose, you have to remember that we were allocated $1,200,000 to operate the program statewide for the entire year. Yeah. In addition to that, as you recall from the House CRA last year, we were then given an additional $129,800 to fund the AFDC children. Well, no one really knew what the impact of the AFDC children was going to be, and it's been terrific. We were given $129,800 to fund what would have cost us approximately $600,000 for the entire year.
Well, again, if I may follow it up.
Certainly.
If you knew then that you you actually approved any of these number of groups, 1 through 5.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, this is what we're talking about, isn't it? These groups, two yes. Different ones. That they have 5 different groups, different categories of income.
Yes, sir.
So that after September, after July 1, then these should be approved of. You okay these that they could pay?
Yes, sir. Those groups are maximum schedules.
Yeah, so then if they are, then I can see if they run out of money. Why you didn't come in for a supplemental to your department then? Because this money is his due. If you basically have approved of it, they run out.
Yes, sir.
Then shouldn't you come in instead of saying, well, you've spent your wads, that's it. And I don't believe in cutting off a program, but you should have enough reins on it to start with to know if it's going to be complete after, as Representative Smith said, that's by September. At least you should have known the amount of money that's being spent, and you could have been overseeing them before it runs completely out. And you start cutting them off. If it's going to be that only Group 1 is going to be entitled, I know we went over this last year, as to the amount of money that the low income to help them. I'm certainly for it. But I think it's up to your responsibility to determine which groups are going to be, and at the start of the year, that this is going to be it.
Well, not offering this as an excuse, sir, But I wish that we did have that good a handle on exactly what's happening in the program. Now, we've had 1 year of operation so far, and that was during fiscal year 76. At the end of fiscal year 76, we had the addition of AFDC WIN clientele in the program. So this meant essentially that any historical data from 76 that we had that we could work with, firm figures, was subverted by the addition of the additional clientele, which by law we must show preference to. We actually don't have enough history yet to be able to come up with some good projections, but the cost implication of the program itself, if we are to continue funding everybody that's completely, entirely, totally eligible on the guidelines that you have on the groups 1 through 5, is frightening to me. It's
well,
the cost itself.
For me, I still think as long as you have approved of those, but then the money should be allocated for that. But cannot be dropping them off. He should have done it at the start of the year, say, well, down to group three is as far as we're gonna go. That's the intent of it, isn't it?
But, yes, sir, but I'm, but as I say, we allow the local flexibility to cut off those groups.
Well, fine, why do you do that? And then all of a sudden, then chop their head off when they get into the middle of their run.
It depends on where you're at, sir, in the state. Now, the municipality of Anchorage sat down before Christmas last year and took a look at their expenses. As a matter of fact, I think Ms. Connolly could come back and tell you that she stopped accepting any new clients well before Christmas to sit down and let her costs settle down so that she could see what the costs are running. That's when she discovered that there was going to be a shortfall. That's when she came to us and said, we need more money. Well, we took the remainder of the money that we were holding for growth of the program in new communities and reallocated that to the different communities. Ms. Donnelly then sat down and took a look at what she had with the new funding and decided, well, yes, I can accept new clientele. And the program ran that way until she discovered that her monthly expenses were running too great again. Sir, we're running the statewide program with two people. We make the grants to the communities and allow them the flexibility to manage the program within statutory and broad guidelines. We give them as much authority as possible. It was our hope, and it's still our hope, that each one of the communities will sit down and take a look at the resources they have and appropriate it or allocate it over a monthly basis as they best see fit for their own particular community.
Well, if all five of these are within the law, then they should be funded then.
Yes, sir. If that's what the legislature wants to intend, then I have no objection to it. It's my understanding that the legislative intent was not to fund everyone who qualifies.
I've just been reading the law, and I don't see anything in the law that says don't fund everybody who qualifies.
Well, it was really spelled out in the hearings in the intent itself, but there is one section of the law that tells us to show preference to the low-income and single-family.
Yes, families. That leads to the question as to what is low-income, and who decides what's low-income? It seems to me all these categories are low-income. Even at $17,000 a year, if you're a single parent, you've got a lot of kids and you have to work, you need help with your daycare assistance. Mr. Kelly?
Well, actually, I sort of agree with the concept of just turning the money back to the municipalities and back to the local areas and let them take care of the program. You know, that's called decentralization, you know, it's a wonderful concept. I wonder, Mr. Pitt, on this $412,000, $412,500, is this planned to fund just for the remainder of the year, the Group 1?
No, sir. No.
That's all five groups?
It would fund all five groups, plus the growth that the program would have realized in each community had the funds not have been extended so early, so that each person who came in who could potentially qualify could have gone on to the assistance program.
What's the price tag for next year?
Well, sir, our budget submission was for exactly the same funding that we had this year. The BRC committee increased our budget by $234,000, so roughly next year's budget will reflect a $1,600,000 subsidy.
We'll get $412,000
right here. Yes, sir, I know that. I do have some figures worked up that would show you the exact cost based on the total groups of Group 1 through Group 5, or letting the committee decide what I have trouble deciding is exactly what is need. If we say that need is Group 1, if need is Group 2, if need is all five groups, I do have the figures worked. And quite frankly, in answer to your question, sir, that if we fund everybody that qualifies for the program on a statewide basis next year, it would cost us between $4 and $7 million.
Further questions for Mr. Pitts?
Yes,
sir. Mr.
Olson. Now next year, how are you going to propose to it? Are you just going to give one of these municipalities X number of dollars, and when that runs out, leave it up to themselves to, or are you going to take from what happened this year and say, now we're going to limit it to a minimum of Group 2, and then you're on your own, or what's going to be done?
Well, Representative Ossie, it depends to a great extent. If the intent of the program is changed by the legislature, then we'll certainly go with the program as it is this year. If it is not, and our funding level is depressed to the 1,000,006, I don't mean depressed, but expanded only to 1,000,006, and I'm not advocating more money for the program, then obviously we're going to have to change the guidelines somewhat so that not so many people qualify for the program, and we do in fact show preference to the low-income people. I would do that by by probably locking off group 4 and 5 from qualifying whatsoever and stretching the other three groups out somewhat so that less monies would be expended, covering the more needy families only.
Well, I think this is the idea. I think that the municipality should know just where the top line is. Then if they want to get more of it, then they can come and to the legislature and say, well, we want to include these other ones. But here's I have, you let one go down to group 5 and say that is okay. They must have your okay on it, though.
No, sir. As long as they live within the grant contract itself, which stipulates that the statute must be followed and that preference must be shown to low-income and single-parent families, then the communities have broad latitude of who to fund.
Well, this is the part that I understand. There's no document as to low-income. Who determines this?
No, sir. We determine it with a differential subsidy schedule, which I think is probably what you're looking at.
Yeah.
We lay it out saying this much net income constitutes group number 1, which should be funded at 100%. Within income levels, then, so many people would fall into group 2, and at the local option of the community, they can fund group 2 from 80% to 100%, taking into account specific mitigating circumstances for each person who would come in and apply for the subsidy.
Well, then, were each one of the municipalities assured that they, this is the amount they was going to get and no more? And
for this year?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So if they went into group 4 and 5, then they're doing it really on their own, then?
So to speak, yes, sir. It's strictly their option.
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Pitts, I've got to ask why Fairbanks is so far in the, well, not in the hole, actually, but why they overspent so much more than anybody else.
I'm sorry, sir, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I mean, is there a difference in the way the program is run?
Yes, sir. Fairbanks has a very unique problem. Last year, Fairbanks started into the program rather late in the year, and I think the funding became available in December in Fairbanks. The borough itself, North Star Borough, administered the program itself with its own personnel last year, and they had a turnover of 3 different people administering the program, so that no one was really there long enough to get a good hold on the program. Well, last year, because they started into the program so late in the year, they had plenty of money. They were just fat. And they could well afford to fund everyone who walked in the door. Well, at the end of the year, with the new contract period, they had a large clientele load, which they carried forward into the new year. This gave, then the North Star Borough contracted to Dr. Frank Goll, the administration of the program during the current year. Dr. Goll had 2 months of experience with the program when he was able to sit down and see that he just didn't have the money. But still, he had 2 months of a great expense, and just the fact of winding down the clientele itself absorbed another large expenditure. So that by the time he could actually start cutting his expenses, a great deal of the grant for the North Star Borough was expended. I think there was some $96,000 expended as of the 31st of January alone.
Could we maybe get a fiscal note or some kind of projection from the department as to if we're going to, probably we're going to wind up going full funding on this program? It sounds like it's getting to that point that we ought to know what we're looking at 5 years down the road, some kind of projection over the next 5 years of what we're talking about in cost.
I can tell you what we're looking at next year if we fund the program entirely. I haven't projected it beyond next year. And again, that's assuming no more changes in the clientele itself.
What are we looking at for next year?
I don't have copies, Madam Chairman, I'm sorry. But again, it depends upon what the legislature defines as need. What frightens me is that the expenses do dramatically go up.
The machine is broken. Let me pass it around. I guess what's on the bottom is that if need is defined as the total of group 1, it's $2 million, groups 1 and 2, $4 million, and so on. You can look at the figures at the bottom.
These are the totals after you went to group 1, 2, 3, added together.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir. Accumulated totals.
Any more questions? Mr. Pitts, I have a question. You seem to have made the decision that groups 4 and 5 should not qualify for daycare assistance. That's the message I seem to be getting from you, that you really feel as though they should not qualify because they're not low-income groups. Is that the decision you've made? Or?
Are you asking me philosophically, Madam Chairperson?
No, I'm asking you as the administrator of the program, decision you made.
As the administrator of the program, I'd have to say that it's my understanding the legislative intent is to fund the most needy first. Groups 4 and 5, or persons in those groups, are less needy than groups 1, 2, and 3. So I'd have to answer yes. Philosophically, if I were to respond to your question, I'd have to say no. Philosophically, I believe those groups are what the program is intended to help.
Then philosophically, if you follow your philosophy, why didn't you come in for supplemental?
Well, I think my philosophy conflicts with our interpretation of the law.
I don't see anything in the law. I read the law this morning. I read the whole thing, and I don't see anything in the law that tells you to cut anybody off at a certain date. Eligibility of families, and so on. You should determine the eligibilities on the basis of the following factors, and so on. There's nothing even that says you shall set up categories. You know, that was left to you. But
yes,
What is Category 5? What's the income level of Category 5?
It depends on where you're at. For instance, in Anchorage, Category 5 cuts off, in Juneau also, at a net income of $14,999. At that income net, you would be qualified to receive from 20 to 40%
net, subsidies. Net, what's net? Is that net?
Well, that's your gross income, sir, less federal income tax, state school tax, FICA taxes, workman's comp if you have to pay it, any mandatory retirement or union dues.
Is that for both husband and wife, or?
Yes, so we're talking about net family income now.
Net family income.
And that makes you eligible for a 20 to 40% subsidy in your daycare costs. So you're paying 60 to 80% of the cost yourself at that income level, right? So,
yes, you are. In addition, we do allow an adjustment of your gross income of $1,000 per child beginning with the second child.
Go ahead, Chris.
I just want to speak to the bill, and I want to say that I really feel that this sounds like to me that it's an administrative problem within the executive branch where it should be handled. And I have to speak against this bill as far as I am concerned, that I feel that, you know, if there's a problem, it ought to come from you folks rather than from us as lawyers, you know, in requesting additional monies to do your job.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Just stick around. Ms. Dick, did you want to testify? Could you tell the reporter who you are and tell the rest of us?
I'm Margo Dick, and I'm the daycare administrator for Juneau. I don't know really where to start except to say that there are places in Alaska where this money is really needed right now. I don't know if the full amount is needed. I think that what you should consider looking at is, as Harvey said, this estimate is based on what it would cost to fund the full income groups, all of the income groups of the program, and an additional growth factor. In Juneau, in order to finish funding, right now, what the situation in Juneau right now is that we aren't accepting any new people into the program. We're funding all 5 groups. We're accepting AFDC people and WIN people that come in to apply, but no additional people. In order to finish out our program, we don't have a high influx of AFDC people. Without accepting any new people in the program, we could do it in June. We have a waiting list, a long waiting list, with people who have a very, you know, very legitimate need. They would qualify for about anywhere from a 50 to 100% subsidy. And in order to fund these people, we would need about an additional $7,000. if you want to take in a growth factor, which will occur, I'm sure, because we have people coming in every day asking about the program and putting in their applications. I think a growth factor should be added into that. So what I'm saying is that if you're looking at this bill as an outrageous cost thing, I think that what you should consider is cutting it back to what would be an emergency appropriation to finish out the program until the end of the year. And Fairbanks, I'm not qualified to speak about Fairbanks, except that I know that they have a legitimate need, and I think that it is important that more people than just Group 1 be funded for them. So, can I answer any questions?
Chris? Of course, not the direct question of you, Harvey, more than anything else, so the fact that I'm wondering, it seems like that maybe what we should be looking at is the total department's budget and looking for an RP out of the department to take some money out of some other areas in the department to take care of this program.
Ms. Dick, I have two questions. Are you finding any abuses on the program? Any people who really don't qualify that are standing
in
line?
No, not as far as income. There are some people that don't qualify. Not many at all, maybe one or two, three cases where people don't qualify because of, for example, they aren't working and they didn't notify me right away that they weren't working. So it was lapse of maybe a week or two, and then they're stuck with the daycare bill for 2 weeks,
right.
But they've sent their kid on, but they're stuck with it, so,
My other question is, do you feel that this has taken any of your people off the welfare rolls because they can go to work?
Definitely.
Do you have any idea of even an estimate of the number of people that have gone off welfare because they could get work? And
well,
in which categories?
Okay, I have to...
I know, it's a real shock.
What happens usually is that a lot of people who are on welfare come in, and they haven't been employed for a long time, okay? They come in, they're on welfare for the first maybe 2 months of their employment, and then they go off welfare, and if things go pretty well, they stay with their job. Sometimes, and it happens, they quit their job and they go back on welfare and they're no longer working, they're no longer in need of daycare assistance, theoretically, at that point.
Do you feel that the program is really benefiting these people to leave welfare and become actively employed?
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. And I think that's what one of the things that's really important is that people who are on the problem with cutting off group 2, 3, 4, and 5. Not 4 and 5 so much, but especially group 2 and 3, is that people who are on AFDC may come in, they qualify for group 1, we give them assistance. If you cut off group 2 and 3, what happens is they move up within the next couple months of their employment, they move up to group 2 or 3, you cut them off, and they're stuck back in the same position. And, they have to fall back onto welfare. It's really, it's as far as the design of the program, it's not to the benefit of the person. It gets them started and then cut them off. So as far as the logic of working out how you can help a family become a self-supporting family, I think it's really important that group 2 and 3 remain funded.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have one. Ms. Dick, you used some $7,000. Is that what you think you need?
Okay, hold on. We have a waiting list of 13 people right now. The state portion of that per month, the amount charged to the state, would be $1,597.20. Over a four-month period, which is what's remaining in the fiscal year, that would be $6,388, and then when you add a growth factor in there, I added a growth factor of 20%. I know Harvey's growth factor must be, it's much larger. But I come up with $7,665. Right.
Does that include funding everyone that you may have already cut back and all the way through group
five? We haven't cut back anyone in Juneau. So Juneau would be one of the smallest, you know, appropriations. But it would include funding everybody on the waiting list right now. And the people on the waiting list are as in, you know, are in as much need as, I should make that really clear, I think, as the people on the program, obviously.
Do you have people in all categories that are funded now?
Yes. I think we only have one or two people in group five.
Did you have to cut back at all this year?
What we did at the beginning of the year, when we realized that our funding was going to be tight, was we tightened up our, I don't have a copy of our subsidy scale here, but we tightened up our subsidy scale. So in September, when we do our contract reviews, where the parents come in and fill out a contract with us in the daycare, you know, centers, we moved people back on the subsidy. It's dangerous to do that, I think, in a sense, because you don't want to get it past that critical level where they can't make it on a month-to-month basis. But it has helped us to.
Are you speaking when you say $7,665 for the entire Juno program or just the center that you run?
I don't want a center.
Oh,
I run a daycare assistance program in Juno.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood you.
Thank you. I don't know if you want to see this. This is the subsidy scale for Juno. I'm speaking for the daycare assistance program for subsidizing the people on the waiting list with a nominal growth factor included.
Okay. Mr. Pitts, do you think maybe you misplaced a decimal point or something?
No,
you
I
had
don't
76,000.
In my projections?
Yeah.
Madam Chairman, Juno is a fairly unique program right now because the contract was awarded, the grant was awarded Juno less than a month ago. The data that I worked with Juno ended during the month of August. I don't really think that I misplaced anything because what I did was go back and take their average growth rate and project it. Anyone who walks in off the street that's qualified. What Ms. Dick is testifying to is people that are on a waiting list right now. Others don't come in and apply simply because they know it's a waste of time. And the very moment that you open the door back up, it's like opening Pandora's box. Everyone.
I think there's $70,000 worth of difference between what's on the waiting list now and what might walk in before the 1st of July.
I think it's, yes, I do.
Ms. Smith.
Maybe Ms. Dick can tell us, are there licensed daycare slots in Juneau?
Available right now?
That would absorb $76,000.
Oh, that's such a good question, and I can't answer it. And I'll get, you know, if you are going to be holding a testament tomorrow, I'll get the facts for you.
That would be just.
I might as well. Tomorrow's Saturday. I would like to finish this up today, if possible. Could we all meet after the session? Is that possible? Anybody got a conflict?
No, not really.
We'll keep going for a few minutes more, but I'd like to meet after the session.
Okay, well then I'll get it for you.
Because I know Harvey's from out of town, and it would be nice. Do you suppose you could have it?
No, I'm sure I can.
Oh, sure.
I would like to move sometime in the next 5 minutes on the amendment.
Okay.
I have a question. I just make one of some of these figures. Maybe I'm off base on it, but if I just took Fairbanks, for example, and the number of kids, 113, and the amount was 129,600. So it would cost then about $1,100 per child. Then I go down to group five, 13 costs $20,000. That costs $1,400 per child. I can't.
Well, they pay the group five pays 60 to 80% of their own costs.
Is this what they're?
This
paying
one out? Is funded at 100%. Group one is my understanding, and group five is funded at. I mean, they pay 100% of the parents' costs. The fund pays 60 to 80%. You know, 20 to 40% of the parents' costs here, and somewhere in there is.
I don't know. I've just been using these figures. don't understand this, and I just don't believe that's any completely wrong.
Oh, I see.
I'm gonna have this explained to me, then, not this,
Mr. Pitts, perhaps you could come back up and explain the method of calculating these figures from this, could you?
Okay, and also, one thing that I think it would be, it might be advantageous to find out what it would cost Fairbanks, you know, to, just not the growth calculated, or a minor growth factor calculated.
I think Mr. Hart will probably be answering.
Okay.
Before Mr. Pitts comes back, let's take up Merle's amendment. Merle amended, made an amendment to add $80,000 to the sum for the cost of continuing the program in Anchorage at the present level. That was not included in the calculations that we received from the department, but we have learned from Ms. Donnelly and others that the Anchorage program has been cutting back on their categories also. Mr. Pitts tells us that it would take $80,000 for Anchorage to be funded at the same level.
That $80,000, that's just for groups 4 and 5, and the money is there to fund groups 1 through 3 between now and the end of the year?
Depending on how many new 100 groups, 100% subsidies, and being that the municipality has got a large CETA program, with the amount of Title VI monies that are being allocated to give employment to those eligible for AFDC, I projected on the second page of exactly how many, as of yesterday, that we have an AFDC client and the cost of them annually. But there's nothing to say, because if you'll look into our January statistics, we brought in 44 people in group 1, which means that if we bring that many in during the month of February, we're going to have to drop group 3, which are parents that are paying 20% of their daycare to 40%. And another thing, that as soon as we got in trouble in the Anchorage area and we were reviewing our clients, we explained to them that we were running into difficulties with our money and that there would have to be cut back. And many of them voluntarily, that were eligible for us to pay 80%, said pay 60 so that we can stretch the money a little further.
Mrs. Donnelly, that is absolutely commendable, and I just wish that some of these other areas in the state had taken the same approach and we wouldn't have this problem today.
But I think that the largest problem actually was in the inheritance of the AFDC clients, and because of having to pay 100% subsidy.
Is there more discussion? I'd like to comment that I know of several single parents in Anchorage who have been cut off the program just recently. And the difficult thing and the sad thing is that these are people who have just gotten going, who have just gotten off welfare, who have just gotten a job and are working at it, and they cannot do the job and still, unless they get this daycare assistance, because they cannot afford, they're not getting paid that much to do it without it. So they're facing having to go right back on welfare and right back. And it's not also going on welfare, it's this tremendous dispiriting situation of feeling as though you're getting going, feeling as though you're getting something going, and getting yourself out of a bad situation and then being thrust back into it again. So I will support the amendment, also because that's my community. Of course.
I don't blame you. I would do the same thing.
Are you ready to vote? All those in favor of the amendment? Opposed? The amendment carries. We'll add the sum of $80,000. Let's try to meet here again right after the session.
Could we make it 11:30? Well, within half hour after the session.
Let's try to make it by 11. Let's try to make it by 11 if we possibly can. I don't know how long the session is going to go. We'll try to be back here at 11. I'd like the record to reflect the representatives Phillips, Smith, Snyder, Kelly, and Rudd are present. One of these days I'm going to forget all our names. I'm already starting with that. Ms. Chitwood, would you like to testify next?
Yeah, I'm Ginny Chitwood from the board, representing the Board of Child Advocacy, and I have very short testimony. I just would like to put the board on record as in favor of the supplemental appropriation for daycare assistance. I think the other people here earlier this morning who are involved specifically in operating the programs have demonstrated the need, and the board just generally is in favor of this supplemental.
Thank you very much. Are there questions, Ms. Chitwood? Thank you very much. Mr. Hartle, can we hear from you?
Yes, we're recording here.
My name is John Hartle, and I'm from Fairbanks, and I'm a center operator in Fairbanks, but I'm not really here to represent the center, I'm here more to represent the people that are on the daycare assistance program, and the many people that have been dropped off the daycare assistance program in Fairbanks. I had a whole bunch of things prepared to say here, but I'd like to address some remarks to things that Mr. Pitts was saying earlier. For instance, he estimated the need for the last 4 months of this year to be at $412,500, and that included for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, $262,800. You probably have those figures somewhere. Okay, that number is twice, more than twice, what was originally allocated for the North Star Borough for the entire year. I just spoke with, yesterday evening, Dr. Frank Gold, who administrates the program, the daycare assistance program in Fairbanks, and I asked him how much he had estimated his need to be at. And he said that if they took back on the program all the people that had been dropped off from all the categories, and they put on all the people on their waiting list from all their categories, and they included the growth factor, that number would be for the North Star Borough $75,000. This number that Mr. Pitts has laid out is three and a half times, more than three and a half times that large. Now, also in the North Star Borough, I happen to know that in their peak month, before they had any indication that their program was in trouble, that they dispersed $20,000. Since then, they've dispersed less per month. If they dispersed in their peak month $20,000, this times 4 months is $80,000. Once again, a third of these other figures. Now, I submit that this discrepancy between the two figures here for the need, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, is significant, and it tends to indicate that the Pandora's box that Mr. Pitts referred to as opening with this bill doesn't really exist. Now, I am, of course, in favor of a supplemental appropriation, but I think that it should be the right amount and not a too large amount. And that new investigations should be made to determine what the actual need is for the last 4 months of this year. One reason I think that it should be smaller is it would increase its chance of passing, and I realize that there's a tremendous need for this program to pass. Okay, to go through a few more numbers here, if you don't mind. If we start with Mr. Pitts's number, his determination of the need for the last 4 months of the year, and we took the average subsidy rate, which I don't know for Fairbanks, honestly, I know for Juno now, because they are still funding all five categories, they average 60% of each participant's bill. Anyway, I have that figured as another number also. If you paid this much money over 4 months at 60% of people's bills, it would require 435 children to be on the program. There's only 395 licensed daycare slots in all Fairbanks, and all those are not available, far from it in fact. That at our center we've had a waiting list many times, our enrollment times, and we don't always, we're licensed for 36, we don't always have 36, we often have 32, 30 or so, because we feel that we're better able to serve that many people. So I submitted there are not even 395 available licensed daycare slots in Fairbanks, and that this amount of money would be more than enough to fill all of them. Now, at 100% subsidy, which it would not be if you funded all five categories, it would fill 260. The program has never filled anywhere near that many. Okay, that's all on that subject, I think. Now, though, questions, this would be a good time for questions.
Mr. Snyder.
Madam Chairperson, do I understand you now to say that instead of the 262, you're requesting merely 75?
Well, it's not I that would do any requesting, but I...
You think 75?
I think that is a closer figure. That is a figure calculated by the man that administrates the program on the local level. Now, perhaps his figure is low. It possibly may be, but the fact that it's almost a quarter of the other figure is significant. Between a third and a quarter.
May I just refresh my memory? Did you say that was for all five categories?
Mm-hmm. That was to fill all five categories and all the people that have been rejected off the program and all that are on the waiting list.
Out of four FY77. For as part of this appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
I have some other questions. All right, let's start from the back. Somebody mentioned today, maybe it was Mr. Pencil, that to fund this at a higher level would destroy the legislative intent. Now, I realize you can talk all night about legislative intent and not really get anywhere, but I submit that the program is not now meeting the legislative intent, that legislative intent was to have a program that meets the needs of some people, and now it's meeting the needs of a fraction of the people it was intended to meet, that it is dropped off so many people. There were 50 people dropped in November in Fairbanks. There were 35 more dropped in December in Fairbanks. At the center that I worked at, a large percentage of the children there were on daycare system program. A large percentage of the children were single parent, or single parent children. Most of them were all dropped in November, in December, mostly with very, very short notice. And this puts people in a bind, especially those single parents. As I say, more than half the kids that are centered are from single parent families. I don't intend to take up your time with a lot of individual case examples. You can imagine them, but one or two might be illustrative. I was talking the day before yesterday to a woman I know in Fairbanks who works at our center at Bay, and she was, 2 weeks prior to that, dropped off the program. I happen to know that she makes $4.29 an hour. She works 7 hours a day, so that she makes $600.60 a month before taxes. She pays rent on a small apartment at $250 a month, and her child care bill, because her child is an infant, is $300 a month. Now, after taxes, you add her rent and her child care bill, and it's more than her salary. Before she was dropped off the program, she was making fine. She's not on food stamps, not on any other kind of AFDC, any other kind of program. Before she was dropped off, she was making fine. Now she's in a bind. She doesn't know whether to quit her job and go on to AFDC. Right now she's asking for and getting the credit plan at our center. But we cannot afford to do that. All this is to say that the program was doing quite a community service, was helping a number of people. There was in Fairbanks 150 people on the program at one time, 150 kids. They were all receiving help at their various levels. Most are now not. I don't know, I don't think, in my own opinion only, that it was the intent of this program to fund only the very most needy people. When people who are making $500 a month can be dropped, it seems like if you're going to have a program, it should include them.
Are you then saying that, according to the criteria here, if I understand it properly, that if you're saying $500 a month,
that's after taxes?
After taxes, I see. Okay, group two.
Is that group two? Well, yeah. She was in group one. Apparently they are cutting into group one is all I can determine that. Mr. Pitt says that nowhere are they cutting into group one. Well, this was perhaps a week ago. I'm not sure if he's aware of that. He said that no way she could have been in group one to be cut into. Okay, thought for so. I do know what her salary is. I do know that it's $600.60 a month before taxes.
John?
Sure.
Just one question. You talked to Frank yesterday on those
mm-hmm.
figures?
I sure
okay,
did.
He mailed us, I'm just wondering if he has revised his figures. In the letter that he mailed us, he's estimating the yearly need at $300,000.
Okay.
So, is it possible he was giving you those figures without a growth factor included?
It is possible.
Okay, his spending level for the last 6 months was $128,620. Which would bring it up
per year.
Yeah, well, no, that's what they had spent since July 1st, as I understood it.
No, that can't be correct, because they were given $128,620 for the entire fiscal year.
But he had spent that basically as of the end of December.
No, he's not.
So if you double it, it comes out $257,000, which is above the $75,000 quarterly estimate. Is it possible that he gave you just the maintenance figures?
Well, no, he said that figure would include taking everybody that he had dropped in all five categories
okay,
and everybody on their waiting list.
There's a revised figure there.
Perhaps so.
For
the 4 months.
For 6 months?
No, what I was doing was multiplying 4 months as a quarter of the year. So if you multiply it times three, it only comes out
to... I'm not giving you that $75,000 perhaps as a hard figure. I'm just saying that the discrepancy between that and the $262,000 is so large that it is significant, should be taken into account.
Then you're suggesting we could have a supplemental that wouldn't have to be as high, because Fairbanks wouldn't need that much to get through the remainder of this year.
That's exactly what I'm
suggesting. We could lower our supplemental request.
That's exactly what I'm suggesting.
By $187,000 is the difference.
$187,000. Significant difference, we all can see. Now, let me talk about a daycare system program from another company. What's happened here is that it's died of its own success. There was no way to estimate the need when the program started. There was no database of how it is. Now, there was a mechanism built into the original program bill to generate the data to more accurately determine the need. And now this is what has happened. That database has been built up from the program operating almost a year. And the need has been determined to be larger than it was originally allocated. As I say, it died of its own success.
On these daycare centers now, are these strictly from like 8 to 5 during weekdays?
Mm-hmm.
And none of them are open at night or on the weekends?
Mm-hmm. Mostly, what I have to say is what you said.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions for Mr. Hurdle? Thank you very much.
Sure.
Madam Chair, before John leaves, I would like to thank him for the time that he has devoted of his own in
yes,
the
by the way,
of
my own time
kids.
And money.
He's been down here about 2 weeks, and I think that's really neat.
Thank you
very much. Are there other persons
sure.
who would like to be heard on this bill?
I wanted to answer Sally's question.
Come on up.
Should I state my name again?
Yeah, I guess you better.
Mm-hmm. Margot Dick, Daycare Assistance Program with Juno. I called up the various daycare centers to find out how much space they had available right now, and how many children that were already there would be eligible for subsidy, and they gave me their rough estimate. It's large. It's a total of 57 children, and I used an average subsidy of 60%, because that's about what out of all the groups, our average subsidy is about 60%. So in order to fund those 57 spaces and the children already in the program, I mean already in the daycare centers who would be eligible for the daycare assistance program, at a 60%, I mean at an average of 60% subsidy, it would be $34,473.
For a whole year?
For the until the end of the...
Just for the next 4 months. Right.
Okay, so we've thrown away the $7,000 figure and we're back to $34,000.
Well, now wait a minute. That is, if all of those parents, if all of those parents would be willing to come down to my office and go through the, you know, that's the top, that's the top. Right. I mean, if they would be willing to make what they would have to do in order to get on the program, fill out the forms and then make appointments and make that effort, you know, so.
Madam Chair and Margo, perhaps I should clarify for the committee just what our question was earlier. What I had asked was at top level, number of slots available. The projected figures that we were receiving were a growth factor that had no allowance for the number of slots that were available. So there's a ceiling that you can't go beyond simply because there's no place to put these kids, and that's that figure.
I should make a clarification too that the number of slots can change from day to day. I mean, if a new center opened up, there would be more slots. Also, I didn't take into account the daycare homes. And there are probably 35 slots in daycare homes. Most of the daycare homes, we only subsidize a small portion of those right now. And there are only about 5 slots that are available right now in daycare homes. And those might not be available in the next week because she's thinking about closing. So.
This is your best estimate, in other words, of how many children could be accommodated and what the cost would be for the subsidy of that in Juneau.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Fine. Any questions?
Thank you.
No questions. I do have a comment. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Throughout all of the testimony from the administration down to the different groups, we seem to have just somewhat a sloppy accounting system. We get figures that are not right on different levels. The entire program sounds like it might be out of HESS instead of Community Regional Affairs. But I think whatever happens to this bill, that I think it's our duty in this committee to maybe follow up and do some investigation of this entire program.
Yes. I sure take that under advisement and talk about it since we finish with the bill. Are there other persons who wish to be heard? Mr. Pitts, I think we need. Oh, come forward, won't you?
I'm Mary McClanton and I don't represent any group. I'm a mother who needs daycare from time to time, having 4 children and 2 of them of daycare age. Now in Juneau, and I don't think Juneau's figures, what they charge for daycares are excessive, but if I were to put my infant and my 4-year-old into daycare, it would cost me about $500 a month, just about that figure. I really can't afford it. Unfortunately, I don't need full services, but if I did, this is what it would cost me. If I were from a single parent family, I would also have additional problems. And I'm fortunate in that I am not. We're both employed, but as it works, my husband is employed at night and I'm employed during the day. But if you got only one parent, then you can't do that. And every once in a while, I feel that a situation occurs that I should involve myself in. And this is one of those situations. I think that this bill needs your full support. Now, I can't argue the fancy figures of the mismanagement and all this, but whatever you come up with as a good figure, I think that you should support it. And there's probably nothing I can say at this time that has not been said, or that probably won't be said, or somebody isn't thinking about. But I think that we're talking about things like saving money. Now, everybody wants to talk about saving money. I've heard a lot of it about cutting down expenditure, except when it comes to capital move. I haven't heard it. And it just makes good economic sense to support the efforts to keep the parents working rather than on the daycare welfare rolls. And I don't know that much about welfare payments, but it seems to me, say, if a family of eight has three children who need the daycare services, it would cost less to provide the daycare services than to take care of that whole family of eight. I could be wrong, but that's the way it seems to me. I did have some math. This, I think, is an opportunity for you to save some money. Without the adequate daycare program, some parents won't be able to avail themselves to training programs that would prepare them for employment or even better employment. It would seem to me that it would be better to have these people gainfully employed than on the welfare rolls. And then as they become better employed, then they would have no need for these services. And as the young man said, the cost of his own success, you could eventually think of not having to have to support these daycare programs. I, as a parent, would beg you to support whatever figure that you come up with that is needed for our children in the state of Alaska.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
I don't have an answer.
I think you might. Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard? Mr. Pitts, I think we need your help. I think if you could come forward and give us some idea of how you arrived at your figures so that we can make some comparisons, that would be most helpful.
First of all, Madam Chairman, I obtained copies of that data that you saw on the green sheet that I passed around. And maybe
I'd
be great to get you copies of
that. Oh, good. Thank you. It's not those figures that I'm interested in right now. I'm interested in knowing how you arrived at the figures for the $412,000 appropriation.
I really don't want to argue with it depends on which database you look at, which figures you come up with, obviously. The premise that I used in computing the $412,000 was how much would it cost to fund the program entirely for the balance of the year. That would be everybody that walked in off the street and qualified. The figures that I've been hearing given to you outside of my figures lack one important factor. And that is that no one considered what the average growth of the program was during an available database. Now, I did this. I went back and took the average rate of growth in the program over the prior 6 months period, and I applied that on a month-to-month basis for the remainder of the year. Obviously, it's going to cost less if we don't consider growth in the program, and I won't debate that whatsoever, and I'll admit that. But the figures that I supplied you are the maximum figures that would be necessary, and anything that you funded in between would fund some sort of in-between program. Again, you have to remember that Juno is sort of an exception. Like I say, our contract with Juno was completed only last month, less than a month ago. We have figures for Juno only through last August. That was quite archaic material that I was working with, and I won't argue with Margo at all on the figures that she gave you. She obviously has more up to date figures than I do. I would say that what she is telling you, though, is that she doesn't consider any daycare homes whatsoever. And, of course, we do have kids funded in daycare homes. The parent has the option of taking their child anywhere they want as long as that provider is licensed. We have found, as a matter of fact, that the program's success in Anchorage resulted not only in the total number of people that we helped, but a dramatic increase in the licensed spaces available. I think Ms. Donnelly would tell you that when the program originated in Anchorage last year, there were 1,300 licensed spaces available. Currently, there's well over 2,000 licensed spaces available. So it appears that as our program grows, so does the number of spaces available to accommodate those children. Therefore, I felt that really the number of spaces available is an insignificant factor. Perhaps my judgment was wrong. There, you have to consider daycare homes in addition to the daycare centers simply because a parent may be taking their child to an unlicensed person and find out that they could be subsidized and that the state would pay for the cost of the care of the child. They then start talking to their provider, and the provider applies for a license, gets it, and the state takes over the payments for her or him. So I don't see how you can possibly consider the cost of the program based either on the number of people on a particular waiting list at this very point in time or the number of license spaces available at this particular point in time. The history has just proved that that's erroneous thinking. In addition, I'd like to point out one other fallacy in the argument of funding, and that is that most of the figures that you had assumed that we would be funding people on a full-time basis. On a full-time basis, let's take the average place of Anchorage Juneau, is $12 per day based on the subsidy schedule that you have readily available to you. That's for a toddler, anyone who is older than 12 years. This amounts in...
I mean, 12 months.
Okay, this amounts to roughly $264 per month per child at 100%. We also have an infant rate that we pay. The infant rate is higher, obviously, because the cost of caring for an infant would naturally be higher. The infant rate runs roughly $330 a month. That's another variance in the figures.
Let me finish.
In addition, we pay on a part-time basis, full-time basis, and more than full-time basis. So each child subsidized at a different rate, subsidized in a different group, may be attending either part-time, full-time, or more than full-time, and this would again vary the cost. It's another factor. There's just so many factors in it that must be used, but the major factor that you have to determine on is the average rate of the growth of the program over a particular period of time. I won't argue that the database is scanty, because it really is. It really is.
One thing, though, considering this is such a new program, wouldn't it be reasonable to assume that the growth rate in the first 6 months it would be much higher than the growth rate, say, in the last 6 months? Wouldn't this be tending to level off about right now?
I assumed that in the very beginning, sir, last year, as a matter of fact, but that hasn't been the case. The asymptote hasn't nearly been reached in support of growth or the potential subsidies that has been done.
Well, given that there's a set number of children out there, at some point we're going to pass that curve of maximum utilization, and the program is going to stop growing, but you can't guess when that time would be.
That's correct, sir.
Most people stop having children.
I'll give you one example, for instance. In Anchorage, we haven't slowed down the growth until perhaps now that these two groups have been cut off. We're up to around 600 kids subsidized in Anchorage alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that new people are applying each day. In addition to these waiting lists that we have in the different localities, there's also another factor that has to be tossed in, and that is the fact that everybody who would potentially qualify has not applied simply because the word has gotten around that nobody else is getting on anyway. And I submit to you that that's a significant factor, that once we do start the subsidy again, make it available and a viable program in each community, that we're going to have a lot of new people come in who have not come in before. I received a letter dated, I think it was either the 9th or 10th of this month, from Dr. Gold in Fairbank. In that letter, I received a copy of another letter which was going to be sent out to all what Fairbanks classifies as Category 1 and 2 and subsidized people. Roughly, it's equivalent to everybody in Group 1 and part of the people in Group 2. And in the letter, Frank Gold indicated that their subsidies would stop as of March the 1st. Well, I got on the phone and talked to Frank, and I had the other $18,000 that he did not yet know about, so we managed to have that particular letter rescinded. As a matter of fact, it was never mailed out, simply because we did have the $18,000 that we could give. So there is no one, according to Frank Bill yesterday morning, in Group 1 who is not being subsidized nor who will not be subsidized for the balance of the year. And if there is a person who has been dropped, I'm certain that it was inadvertent.
Questions? It's really hard to know where to come down, isn't it? Harvey, could you, the only one that we haven't heard from is Kodiak. Could you, on the basis of what the Fairbanks and Juneau people have told us, give us a guesstimate as to what their figure might be on the basis of the way they figured it? As I understand it, Fairbanks and Juneau were basing their figures on picking up all the people that had been dropped from the program, continuing the funding of all the present people on the program, picking up all that were on the waiting list, accounting for a 20% growth factor, funding all five categories, and putting all of those things into the number of daycare slots available. And that's how they came up with the figures that they came up with. If you did that same thing for Kodiak, would you come up with this 73,000 or 600, or do you think the growth factor that you used was probably bigger than 20%, or what?
Well, let me explain to you about Kodiak. It's, as I say, each program is unique in itself. Kodiak, in the beginning of the year, had about just under 100 licensed slots. And when we allocated Kodiak's portion of the allocation to them in the form of a grant, we didn't give them very much money. I have the figures here. Let me find this, so I don't give them the wrong figures. Kodiak, in the beginning of the year, had Kodiak in the beginning of the year had 91 licensed spots. Their total grant came to $32,851. Roughly two-thirds of that was expended by October. And the reason that was expended was because Kodiak Coast Guard Station has a daycare center which was not licensed. Now this is a Coast Guard base who subsequently came in and got licensed, and they increased their license slots by 130, which is more than 100% total license slots income. They were subsidizing people at the Coast Guard base. Subsequently, they did run out of money very early in the year, and they've been restricted to where they were the first program that restricted intake. This was a factor we had no way of foreseeing, nor did they. Again, it becomes kind of philosophical of whether or not we should fund military personnel who are transient and not really the state employee or the state residents that we really should be mostly concerned with. However, the legislation itself does say that we fund anyone who takes their kids and meets the income criteria, and either in a licensed facility or a facility recognized by the federal government, of which the Coast Guard is a branch.
Merle. Madam Chairman, one of the workers of the daycare center in Kodiak is a friend of mine. She was dropped from the program because of lack of money. She is legally blind, so her job opportunities are restricted, and I fully resent any cutting off of monies for a program of this nature.
I gather we all feel that way. The problem is, how much money do we need to put into the program to keep it going?
I'd like to get the question resolved. Are we indeed providing daycare centers for members of the Coast Guard in Kodiak? Coast Guard families?
You know, Fort Greeley, you know,
if we are not?
Fort Wainwright and Fort Richardson.
If this is the case, perhaps we need a revision to the bill, because those people receive food and clothing breaks that the rest of the people don't, and therefore their salary scale is not really accurate to the cost that they're paying. I don't think this program is really designed for that kind of a break. I think Ms. Donnelly would like to make a comment.
Yes, all of those that are in the military, all of their clothing allowances and everything are taken into consideration. The majority of them are, if they are working or training, the majority of them would be in the bottom groups of 4 and 5, because their income tax is based strictly on their base pay, but we include all of their allowances. So that an actual subsidy, it's in the groups 4 and 5. Now, whether or not, you know, other daycare eligibility workers are doing as we're doing in Anchorage, but at the present time, this last month, we cut off 1/3 of the licensed slots, 1/3 of the people on Fort Richardson daycare, because they're all in the lower high.
If I might add to that, Madam Chairman, each one of the communities do, they do consider all the fringe benefits also.
Good. Glad to hear that.
But still, our subsidy level is so high that a great deal of those people do qualify.
John, I think at one point you wanted to say something.
It was a very small point. When he was talking about how a certain percentage of the people have infant children and therefore have a higher rate calculated in Fairbanks, they only have about 5% infant rate, and I believe you know it's similar.
Ed, would you go through these groups? Group 1, that's 100% on this?
This is a projection.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to get
The funding levels for those groups, yes, sir. I certainly will for it. But, I don't have anything to do with it. Group 1 is funded at 100%. Group 2 is a sliding basis from 80 to 100%.
Now, how do I interpret
what's the income level?
It depends on where you're at, sir.
It's on this page. This shows Group 1 income, families, kids, and amount in Juneau, Kodiak, and Fairbanks with totals.
Well, if it was in Fairbanks, they'd still get 100%? Is that what you mean?
Yes, sir. The amount of the subsidy has no bearing on it. The amount of the income depends on which group they're placed in.
Well, you know, in group 2, so if they would be, as you say, from 80 to 100%. Now, who would be getting 100%? Excuse me, who would be getting 100% in group 2?
Well, that's one of the local options of the local community. We gave them the option of a 20% sliding variance there to be able to consider mitigating circumstances for each individual family. If a family comes in and they qualify in the group 2 basis, but suppose they have a backlog of medical bills and this sort of thing, or have a difficult time financially making it, then the administering agent has the option of funding them at 100% rather than the 80%. And it's on a case-by-case basis. Group 3 is funded from 60 to 80%. Group 4, 40 to 60. And group 5, 20 to 40.
I noticed in your sheet here, Commander, that out of it there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that go all 5 groups. Whereas there's one that goes just one group, and one that goes 2 groups, one that goes 3 groups, one that goes 4 groups, one that skips one group with 1, 2, 3. So it's about half and half. As to, I was just wondering why some of these other ones didn't go there.
They have no one subsidized in those particular levels, sir.
Or is it because they're not aware of it?
No, it's not because they're not aware of it. Apparently.
I mean the people.
Oh, each one of the people there, I'm sure. The programs, the word of the program itself has gotten around quite well.
I was just thinking that while still, I'm sure there'd be someone there for
Madam Chair, it might help Mr. Osi if you will remember when he passed this last year, it's contingent on someone in the community sponsoring the daycare assistance program. The community must opt to sponsor the program.
Right.
So some communities won't have it just because the community won't put up the 1%.
Well, they do have it. They got three positions in there. And I'm just wondering why the other two.
Yeah.
Also, was last year when we went over this, why is a 750 was always going to substitute? I mean, they can subsidize it with 750. I have to keep ringing the bell from last year.
You mean Senate Bill 753? The House Committee substitute? Well, really, that shifted the funding or subsidization of the kids in AFDC and WIN programs from Health and Social Services to this particular program. It also created a loan fund for the revolving loan fund for child care facilities, which has been a kind of a boom, too, in different places. And
no,
it has resulted in increasing the number of licensed slots.
difference on this bill that we're talking about. But last year we had quite a discussion about it, and my the grant worker was to help those that really need the low income. They would get 7.5 and pay through the daycare, and they would pay it.
Yes, sir. It did in fact transfer over the people who would be in the highest category, group one, subsidized at the highest rate. So yes, we do continue to subsidize those at 100%. That was the intent of the discussion last year, as I recall.
Because this all these groups is what kind of baffles me. I wasn't aware we were going to have that type of thing. I didn't think that was the intent of the bill.
Well, this goes back to the intent of the original bill that created the program itself. The language was that we should create a program that would supplement and complement the AFDC WIN program within the Division of Social Services, such that anybody that qualified under those federal programs would not then be eligible for our program. It was a means of economy for state dollars. Well, last year, House Committee substituted Senate Bill 753 did away with that particular portion of the intent by shifting over the AFDC people into this particular program.
Let's have one more and I'll pass on to someone else. On this, did you have problems like this prior to this year?
No, sir, we did not.
Why was that?
Well, I'll have to concur with Ms. Donnelly on her opinion that the subsidy that we're providing for the former welfare children, you know, the AFDC WIN clients, had a terrific impact on the program.
Why were they switched over to this program?
Well, that is in itself a long story too, sir. Last year, I guess it was October of 75, the federal government brought out some new FITCA requirements, which were not really being met anywhere in the state. Requirements are the federal interagency daycare requirements. And they had to do with the number of staff in the daycare facilities versus the number of children, or the staff-child ratio. Well, for instance, the staff-child ratio would have been cut in half. The state's ratio was 1-10. Let's, for the sake of argument, say that the FITCA requirements were then to require 5-1 for federally subsidized children. With the exception of one daycare center and possibly two in Anchorage, and one that I know of in Juneau, and perhaps one in Fairbanks, I know of no other centers that could have met that criteria. So on the last day of September in 75, all the daycare center operators in Anchorage banded together and simply said, hey, we refuse to accept AFDC kids because we cannot meet those criteria and be a viable operation. Well, Senator Chance at the time was in charge of chairman of the council, and she was in Juneau when we received word that that was happening. And we had a meeting between Senator Chance, Commissioner Williamson, and Commissioner McInerney, and my division director and myself. And we decided that one way or the other, we would fund those kids, whether it was this program or the FDC program. Somebody would make sure that the kids were not on the street the next day. And that sort of gave impetus to Senate Bill 753, which shifted then those children over into our program such that we could tell the federal government to keep their requirements that the state would run its own business. And our appropriation was increased by the amount of general funding that would have been matching funding for the AFDC program and the Division of Social Services.
You got the entire amount from the Division of Social Services?
No, sir, we did not get the entire amount. We got the matching funds, the general funds. We got roughly $129,800 out of what they said, admittedly last year, and I agree with, would have cost around $600,000.
Did they receive the appropriation of $600,000 from the legislature?
No, sir, we did not.
So you in effect got the funds that they had received for the program?
Yes, we got part of them, and the rest of the Title 20 funds that would have been matched by the portion we got were shifted into other qualifying programs for Title 20. So the state did not lose the money. They just simply applied them in different areas.
Well, my point is, did Community and Regional Affairs get the money that was appropriated for the program under the Division of Social Services? Did they get the full amount of the money that was appropriated?
Yes, sir, we did get the full amount that was appropriated.
But not the matching fund?
Well, it was only the matching fund, only the 20%.
Harvey, go ahead.
I just have one quick. Do we get federal funds to
on this?
No, sir.
This is
funded strictly from the state's general fund.
And there would be no reason why we couldn't write our own regulations or as residency and...
None whatsoever, sir. As a matter of fact, that was the intent, I understood, when we originated the program.
I'm going to ask you maybe the same kind of question I just asked, but I'm trying to arrive at how much money we really need, and it seems there is such a discrepancy between what Fairbanks and Juneau tell us they need and what you tell us they need, that, you know, somewhere there must be something not unkiltered. If I gave you this